Hi, welcome to Up the Creek, where we look at how institutions and individuals found themselves up the proverbial and dissect their efforts to reach calmer waters.
I'm Mark Forbes.
And I'm Ben Haslam. As journos, we prompted resignations and caused royal commissions. As consultants, we protect reputations when crisis comes.
And today we turn our reputation eye towards the courts, where a defamation action around an infamous alleged rape at Parliament House 5 years ago continued to transfix the nation.
The evidence inflicted significant damage to the reputations of all involved and cast a harsh light on media practices. It goes to show that defamation often leaves the person doing the suing looking far worse.
And the train wreck that was Bruce Lerman's defamation case saw Channels 7 and 10 at loggerheads, amidst tales of Seven paying for cocaine, prostitutes, $360 stakes for the controversial staffer who was accused of raping Brittany Higgins in Parliament House back in 2019. Now, she only went public with the allegations in 2021 in a dramatic interview with Lisa Wilsonson on Channel 10's The Project. And now, finally, we have a verdict from Federal Court Justice Michael Lee, who described the case as an omnishambles. And after the court live feed cut out, his summarised verdict, Jesus, I'd hate to read the whole 324 pages, kept nearly 50,000 people on tenterhooks on the live stream for more than 1.5 hours before he reached his conclusion, when he eventually dismissed Lerman's action and found that, on the balance of probabilities, Lerman raped Higgins. A surprise to you, Ben?
Well, based on the evidence of Lerman's behaviour while the Seven Network was trying to land him for an interview on the Spotlight program, and more on that later, Mark, I wasn't surprised, but then I'm a man. Ask many women, and they are both delighted and relieved because a woman's word was believed over a man's in what was effectively a rape trial. I think that's a hugely important decision.
Yeah, important to note that Justice Lee did raise some doubts about Brittany Higgins' reliability as well. But when it came down to those core matters in question, he strongly backed her version of events and totally eviscerated Lerman, called him a cad and a liar, said it was more likely than not. We're talking about balance of probabilities here, obviously, given this is a civil case. More likely than not, after a long night of drinking and bringing Miss Higgins back to a secluded place, Parliament House, Lerman was hell-bent on having sex with a woman he was finding attractive and who had made sure was seriously inebriated.
Even the victors, Channel 10 and Lisa Wilkinson, did not escape unharmed, with suggestions their central claim that there was a political cover-up of the incident was not substantiated. And Channel 7's Spotlight program had all its dirty laundry well and truly aired in gobsmacking detail.
But before we dissect those details and the reputational consequences, let's recap. Okay, Bruce Lerman, he was a staffer in the office of the then Defence Minister, Linda Reynolds. He was charged but never convicted of raping a junior colleague, Brittany Higgins, in her Parliament House office in the early hours of March 23, 2019, following that infamous boozy night out.
And these claims set off a political firestorm in the Me Too era. But Lerman's criminal trial was aborted due to a juror bringing outside material on sexual assaults into the jury room. Then the ACT Director of Public Prosecutions dropped all charges, citing Ms. Higgins' poor mental health. Now, Lerman then launched defamation actions against media outlets claiming they defamed him, even though their reports on the alleged assaults did not name him, and at the time, police had not identified him as a suspect in the case. Now, Lerman settled with the ABC and news.com.au, but TV network Channel 10 decided to contest the matter in the federal court in Sydney.
Now, I think Lerman was expecting another payday. He picked up three or four hundred grand so far, but he and everyone else a couple of weeks ago were expecting Justice Lee's judgment when suddenly 10 made this urgent application to introduce fresh evidence from a former Channel 7 producer, Taylor Albacht, who 10 claimed would prove Lerman was in contempt of court in his criminal trial and had lied, basically. Abak was a producer on Seven Spotlight program and was tasked with babysitting Lerman, in his words, as they tried to line up the exclusive interview with the former staffer following the dropping of the criminal charges.
Yeah, I think somebody described him as the world's most expensive babysitter, and you'll realise as we go on this podcast why. Now, Justice Lee agreed to hear fresh evidence from Albacht, who spent 2 days in court outlining the efforts he went to secure the interview. And wow. According to Albacht, the Seven strenuously denies this, Seven, cover the cost of two Thai masseuses ordered by Learman at a cost of more than $10,000. Other costs allegedly covered by Seven included
coconut oil is expensive these days, mate.
I wouldn't know. Other costs allegedly covered by Seven included Bruce's $361 tomahawk beef steak weighing 1.9 kilograms, a round of golf in Tasmania worth $401, at least that's kind of healthy, sex workers ordered to a Sydney hotel, a separate trip to a Sydney brothel, and for a bag of cocaine.
Well, I think there were more than one bags of cocaine involved, but no one in this case seems to be lacking in appetite or an ego. I mean, Lerman labelled Outback's allegations the untrue and bizarre story from a disgruntled ex-Network 7 producer.
And aside from the impact these allegations may have had on Lerman's case, remember, it was he who was doing the suing, a big takeaway for me was the effect that it will have on the media's already, shall we say, less than stellar standing in the public's eye. Now, Mark, look, you and I, we're former journalists, and obviously we'd argue that members of the Fourth Estate get a pretty unfair rap, even those who work for Nine newspapers. But checkbook journalism has occurred in Australia for probably about half a century, back to the, I think, probably the Willacy days in the 70s. People caught up in controversy or tragedy have been paid sometimes large sums by some media outlets to tell their story exclusively to one television station, magazine or newspaper or a combination of all three. The ABC, however, does not pay for stories. Even the Journalists Union condones it in point 7 of its code of ethics. It says, quote, do your utmost to ensure disclosure of any direct or indirect payment made for interviews, pictures, information or stories, unquote.
Well, maybe that was put in there to appease your old colleagues at Newsmate and the commercial TV hacks. But most places I worked, including The Age, paying for stories was strictly forbidden. You want people to talk to you for the right reasons, not because they're after money. I mean, curiously, in the Lerman case, Orbach said Lerman had been approached by media from every direction, including Nine, and he said that some print journo, presumably from Nine, said to Lerman, I know you're going to get big money at the end of a trial. I can't offer you money, but I can offer you integrity. Well, that offer seems to have got short shrift.
I wonder who that reporter was who promised a form of journalistic alchemy, turning lead into gold. Integrity. Mm-hmm. It's like the old joke, ethics. Isn't that a county east of London?
Yeah, it's a different world, commercial TV. I did a ill-fated year at Today Tonight some time back, and it reminded me of that Hunter S. Thompson phrase regarding commercial television. He said it was a shallow plastic-lined money pit along which pimps and whores run free and good men die like dogs.
Oh, how we miss him.
They did throw a little bit of money around, but nothing like the sort of money that was being thrown at Lerman.
But the length that Seven allegedly went to, and remember, they deny this, has at the least created a perception, and that's 90% of the truth in the public's eye, that some journalists will behave well outside public norms to secure a yarn. I love this line from Nine Newspapers' Jacqueline Maley. Quote, not since Oscar Wilde or latterly Ben Robert Smith have we seen a defamation trial brought by a person with such catastrophic unintended consequences for that person. And Maley added, the defamation action has been a masterclass in poor life choices and done the journalistic profession few favours, unquote. And I couldn't agree more.
Well, Justice Lee exhibited a similar talent for the turn of a phrase when he spoke of Lerman's claims of damage to his reputation caused by the project story. Justice Lee stated that, having escaped from the lion's den, Mr. Lerman made the mistake of going back for his hat.
Yeah, I think that turn of phrase is going to be used a lot now by a lot of people. It's brilliant.
So he did remind us all how he had personally painstakingly trawled through hours of CCTV footage of the particular night in question, which ran through a couple of different Canberra bars. And he made his own conclusions about what occurred that night and determined that Lerman had lied about a litany of matters, while Higgins' responses, by and large, at the time were truthful. Lee, though, did say about Higgins that when she did come public later on, she concocted and manipulated her versions of events to suit a narrative that was more positive towards her. But she still has ultimately had her core allegations vindicated,
yeah,
whereas
absolutely.
Lerman's reputation is totally trashed. And Maley's right that journalism is also the loser, and there's some serious questions over the moral and professional stands at Seven Spotlight. I mean, this was a significant story, one that Seven entered into the Walkley Awards.
Yeah, it was actually a finalist until being disqualified when the allegations about payment to Lerman emerged.
Yeah, okay, so potentially a good story in an important one. I mean, these allegations over the rape fueled into this massive social movement at the time of Me Too raised major questions about Prime Minister Morrison's response, who had to be reminded by his wife, Jenny, that maybe he should think about how he'd feel if it was his daughter. And some believe it was actually one of those factors in his government's subsequent defeat at the polls.
Yeah, look, there was definitely a massive drop in female support.
So there's a lot in play, and there's a big responsibility on Seven here. The story was always going to have social and political significance. And as part of the negotiations with Lerman, they agreed not to question him on what actually happened at Parliament House that night. And surely to air a story like this, you have to have a degree of trust in what someone is telling you as being true, and a degree of trust in their character. And we now know that Orbach knew that Lerman was involved in alleged out-of-control binges involving alcohol, drugs and thai masseuse. There was also another accusation of rape in Queensland. How could they have ethically broadcast this story without revealing those facts? I think there's some serious questions for the Spotlight's producer there.
Well, Spotlight executive producer Mark Llewellyn claims he was unaware nor condoned or arranged the payments for what he called, quote, illegal or unsavoury activities, unquote.
Well, whatever happened, it cost Llewellyn his job. I mean, around the time that Justice Lee was actually delivering his judgment, Seven released a statement saying Mark Llewellyn no longer works for the network. Llewellyn released his own statement saying he'd resigned and was proud of Spotlight and the team who made it.
And as further proof that crises beget crises, Seven was also in the media, Spotlight, last week when allegations surfaced that in October 2022, the broadcaster's commercial director, the legendary Bruce McWilliam, sent an email to a female Sydney Morning Herald newspaper reporter accusing her of driving Seven's star executive producer Michael Pell to self-harm. The catalyst for the Sunrise EP's alleged action was the reporter asking questions about a secret fraud investigation involving the Sunrise program. Attached to the email was a photograph of, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, a bloodied and bandaged Pell in a hospital gown with a large gash on his forehead. McWilliam's email said, "Why don't you keep it up so he kills himself? You are a complete disgrace." The broadcasting veteran also claimed no such fraud investigation existed. He went on, "If you publish untrue allegations and he tops himself, it's on you," wrote the former lawyer to Kerry Packer, Rupert Murdoch and Kerry Stokes.
It says something about the no-holds-barred tactics of TV execs and TV PR, which often bears a very scant resemblance to the truth.
That's right. And the only problem, talking about the truth, we now know, was that the injury in the photo wasn't self-inflicted by Pell, but rather a weeks-old image of an injury sustained when the executive producer blacked out on a Los Angeles street. Pell later expressed horror and surprise, quote-unquote, that the photo was sent to the reporter and the suggestion she had pushed him to self-harm. And there was an investigation into the misuse of a Sunrise contra deal with Qantas and Accor Hotels, including allegedly by Pell, who has since left the network. The investigation, however, was unable to make a conclusive finding, and sources close to Pell say he believed any questionable use of company resources was unintentional. Whether any of this, of course, will affect Seven's ratings, I'm not so sure. It all titillates the media class, but do you reckon it titillates the punters, Mark?
Oh, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised that TV stars and producers put their hands out for freebies. It doesn't mean they should do it, especially if there's conflicts of interest in play, and there so often are. But, I mean, over at Channel 10, the victory party there would have been dampened by some of the criticisms from Justice Lee, who said the award-winning project story fell short of standards of reasonableness, had an unreliable main witness, was vague and shifting in its details, and significantly, actually quite significantly, they didn't even bother to attempt to contact Lerman for a response.
That's really one of the basics of journalism fair play, isn't it? A right of reply.
You'd think so. He went further, though. He said that the main angle of a project story wasn't the rape allegation, but the allegation of a serious political cover-up afterwards. Interestingly, probably the one witness who got unrequited praise from Justice Lee was Minister Reynolds' former chief of staff, who he said, unlike Higgins, had tried to portray subsequently, had done everything she could to care for her and see that action was taken.
And that's great news for her, because if you read her backstory, she has gone through hell and high water because of the allegations that were raised about her at the time. So I'm sure she'll be very pleased with that finding. Lisa Wilkinson was all smiles when she left the federal court in Sydney following Justice Lee's judgment. She said, "I feel glad for the women of Australia today," while ignoring questions about whether she stood by her infamous Logie speech, where while accepting a Logie for the interview, gave a speech broadcast live across Australia a few days before Lerman's criminal trial, praising Brittany Higgins' courage and bravery, forcing the trial to be delayed by 3 months.
You'd have to think that any working journo would have at least a passing knowledge of contempt laws, wouldn't you?
Well, Justice Lee would agree with you, Mark. He didn't hold back in criticising Wilkinson and the advice she received from TEN's lawyer, Tasha Smithies, who okayed the Logie speech. On Wilkinson, the judge described her as a fourth estate eminence grise with 40 years' experience. He said had Wilkinson thought matters through as an experienced journalist and less as a champion for Miss Higgins, she ought to have known the speech was fraught with danger and recognised that lauding the complainant on the eve of a rape trial would likely undermine the administration of justice. His Honour also criticised Wilkinson's lack of candour in the witness box by refusing initially to admit the Logie speech conveyed the representation that Miss Higgins' rape allegations was credible and to be believed. This is the kind of stuff we learn when we're, well, copy kids, not even cadets.
But if he was critical of Lisa Wilson, and Justice Lee was absolutely scathing towards TEN's solicitor. I regret Smithies, I think, was it Tanya Smithies, I think, from memory? He said...
No, Tasha. Sorry, Tasha. Correction.
I regret to say that the continuing lack of insight by Ms. Smithies as to the inappropriateness of her conduct related to the speech reflects, in my view, a lack of proper appreciation of her professional obligations as a solicitor and her paramount duty to the court and the administration of justice. Don't you love the pomposity of judges?
Oh, ouch. I mean, if that wasn't bad enough, you mispronounced her name, Mark. Poor woman. Nevertheless, and I have no law degree, I agree with TEN solicitor Justin Quill, who outside the court, following the judgment, argued that, quote, we need to have more confidence in our juries, and thinking that our juries would be so influenced by the implication from a Logie speech just doesn't pass muster for me. I'm sorry, I tend to agree. I think we in this country treat jurors as not being the sharpest tools in the shed. And, you know, I'm not saying we should go all the way to the American style where they can do whatever they want. But I think, you know, I think there is some point that in Justin Quill's argument.
Well, I think if you're going to find Wilkinson guilty of contempt, you might as well find the Logies guilty of contempt for awarding the story a gong on the eve of the trial. But Lisa and TEN's legal team should have known better.
Yeah, I agree. So what are the broader reputational lessons from this saga, Mark?
Well, it's just a reminder of why we're constantly advising clients against suing for defamation. When people see a negative story, often the first thing they say is, "We want to sue." But so often they just don't have a case. I mean, it might be true, but also it's often about their companies, and a corporation can't sue for defamation. A company doesn't have a reputation to protect according to the law.
And often they're upset because the story is right. They just didn't want people to know about it. It's a case of it might make you feel better, but just think about the long-term consequences. And corporations can sue under the Trade Practices Act, by the way, but it's a pretty difficult route from my understanding.
Yeah, and courts, as Bruce Lerman would attest, are unpredictable. And defamation actions, which are about your reputation, are almost certain to invite attacks on your reputation.
And further down the track, all the nasty allegations against you will be outlined in detail, with the media free to repeat all of them under the protection of court privilege.
And when do you remind clients that if they sue, every document, every email, every text message vaguely and unthinkingly connected to this issue could be presented to the court? Well, their enthusiasm for action usually wanes. And the final straw is the realisation that the very issue that they most want to disappear will get a whole new round of publicity as the court process takes place.
Never start a court case unless you're confident of victory and have no secrets to hide. Lerman must be regretting the decision to fight this in court rather than just taking the money from News Limited and ABC settlements and running.
And now there will inevitably be an application for cost by TEN, which will, you would think, empty Lerman's bank accounts. And interestingly too, there's now some suggestions around the traps of TEN's making a third-party application for a third party, unnamed, to cover Lerman's costs. Now, there's no suggestion to this point as who that might be, but I would observe from another case involving a certain SAS soldier that Kerry Stokes has got a bit of form in funding legal actions.
So what you're saying there is that they're going to try and get those costs paid by that third party funder?
That has been suggested. That's the rumour I'm hearing, but listen, I have no idea who that funder is, but it's interesting to see what network spotlight on.
I think we've already covered that. Look, and finally, adding insult to injury, poor old Bruce was last week evicted from his Sydney apartment after neighbours complained about late night karaoke sessions. Look, the bloke is a rolled gold creep on the balance of probabilities, but his taste in music? I Will Always Love You by Whitney, Horses by Darryl Braithwaite, and Dirty Dancing's Time of My Life. That's criminal.
Well, throw away the key, I reckon, but that's it for this episode, and so we'll see you next time.
Up the creek. We'll be right back.